teaching, you know, progressing and so on.
We have another speaker or another participant, Dr. Eva Sharubim. You can test your microphone, I think, because I can see the microphone symbol.
It could be that Alia and Laura don't have microphones. That could be.
Could be.
Yeah.
I think you can hear me now.
Yes.
Yes.
We can.
Sure.
We can hear you, Ahmed. And by the way, I started the recording while Ahmed was introducing himself. So nice to see you here.
Okay.
Thanks. So.
I can see one more person. Heba. Heba.
Yeah.
Yes. Uh huh.
Yes.
Okay. Because you didn't mention her, but. Yeah.
She just joined us like half a minute ago.
Can she hear us?
I asked her to test her microphone.
Yeah.
The chat box.
So okay.
So we're already recording, right?
We are recording, that's right, and I might as well introduce us. I'm Vance Stevens in Penang, Malaysia, talking here to Lilika Kouri, whom I believe is in Greece, is that correct?
Yes, Athens.
Okay, in Athens, uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And Hana Khamis, who is, she puts on these webinars. She's the host, the interviewer in the webinars, and I'm just the technician learning together.
Come on, you're not technician. You're learning together founder.
Yes, that's right. Well, you know, the technician is one of the jobs. So okay. Basically, I'm supporting Hana in this worthwhile effort where she's bringing a lot of experts to Egypt and also to the world at large through learning together. But especially in Egypt, she's bringing all these people to come and talk to her.
Hello,
language
Alia.
Technology SIG and her professional development section in Nile TESOL. Now, I have to say, this is the 28th of September 2019. This is learning together.
I would like to try the introduction.
Okay, well, I'll just say one more thing, because do you know what Learning Together episode it is right now?
Yeah, 423.
Very good. Well, take it away, Hana.
Okay, so allow me to introduce us here. This is Learning Together episode 423. Here is Nile TESOL Interactive Webinar series planned by the PD Committee and Learning Technologies Special Interest Group. We are hosted by Mr. Van Stevens, founder of Webheads and Learning Together Communities. He's now based in Malaysia. Today is Saturday of September 2019. I'm Hannah, PD Committee Chair and Learning Technology Special Interest Group co-coordinator in Nile TESOL Egypt. I'm interviewing today Lilika Kouri from Greece. Everyone here, let's welcome our guest speaker to our session today. Lilika, hello.
Hello, nice to be with you.
I'm going to introduce Lilika in a few words. Lilika today is going to tell us about whether or not we should teach literature, because this is an argument still. It's a debate ongoing here in Egypt. A bit about our guest speaker. Lilika has been teaching EFL extensively, and she's also teacher training. And she has done some work in management on the management level in EFL schools. Her experience in these areas were in both United States and in Greece. She is the co-director of educational training consultants. She's conducted teacher education courses in Greece and abroad. Recently, she told me yesterday that she came to Egypt for training purposes. That was news to me. She's a co-author of EFL teacher resource books and some children's EFL course books as well. She's a founding member in TESOL Greece and the Fulbright Alum Association of Greece. She's worked and served on the board of both entities on volunteer basis. Lilika, are you still there?
Yes, here I am.
All right. So okay. Vance is not there, right? Okay. So, yes, you're back. Thank you, Vance.
Yeah.
No, I'm here. I just muted myself, and I muted everybody else in the chat. And anybody, I've muted everybody else so the sound is clear. But anybody, if they want to say something, they can unmute themselves. Everybody has the right to do that. Okay. So go ahead, proceed. And I'm just going to mute also my webcam because also that helps bandwidth. So I'll mute those things, but I'm here. I haven't gone anywhere. I'm listening. And I'm standing by.
Okay. Lilika, I'd like to ask you first, the first thing that came to my mind here, it's about that debate whether or not teachers of general English, like ourselves, ELT practitioners, should be, doing selections or using selections from literary texts and teach them in general English classes because for several reasons, literature has been regarded as something a little bit too archaic, maybe. I cannot really use something that old to teach, everyday language. So that's my first question here. How can I do that? I mean, as a teacher who is a non-specialist in literature, I'm a general English language specialist, and my experience is ESOL, English for speakers of other languages. So is it any relevant? Okay, does literature have any place in our classes as ELT practitioners?
To begin with, you have asked approximately 15 questions on
the same subject,
and I will answer because there's only one answer, and the answer is we are talking as teachers of foreign language, as language teachers. We are not discussing as literature teachers. Now, your major question is, should we be using, because this is the verb, using literature in the language classroom? And the answer is, of course, absolutely yes. But how do we use literature? First of all, let me just take you back briefly to children. There's no question there. We can't say, should we? We have storytelling. And what is storytelling but some of the most known and basic and important and famous fairy tales and works of literature for children. Now I can see you. Oh no, I can see you, Hannah, but that's okay. So if we start with children, we use literature. As we go on, we use literature as text, as reading text, and it is very important to use it. Don't forget that literature is one of the most authentic language materials that we can really use in the language classroom. All the others, with the exception of newspapers, and all that, all the others are extremely, I would call them within quotation marks, they use sterile language and it's quite artificial. Literature, if you are to take prose, short stories, novels, has real people, comes from real life. There's one thing I remember Henry Widdowson say once that somebody's having music or something. With literature, far from being diminished, human experience is extended. So, I mean, we can't do without literature. That's the first answer. The second is, okay, fine, but how do we use it, when, and so on and so forth. And before I stop, just so you could ask me something more if you want to, I would like to say something. Hannah, you mentioned that you are an ESOL teacher, and so am I right now. I used to be a literature teacher for approximately 13, 14 years or so. And when I say literature, I meant I taught literature. I didn't teach language. So the one thing I'd like to say is that there has been a major, misdirection or a major mistake in terms of the way we train teachers of language. We make sure that they know the methodology, and there are some very well-known courses which issue teaching certificates and all that. And there's one thing missing from there: literature. Language is literature, and literature is language. And literature should be taught. Developing teachers and teachers who are in training should also be taught literature. And there shouldn't be one teacher who teaches language that doesn't read at least one literature book or some poetry, at least just to be practical every 2 months, at least. It is totally unacceptable to say that we teach language and not include literature. Language isn't, I mean, we're not making omelet. We're not, cooking something, so we use these ingredients. Language is a living thing. Language is larger and bigger than us. We go, we fly away, language stays and keeps developing. Okay, I stop here. Tell me.
Thank you for that very fiery introduction. I really like it, really, defending that side of the argument. Literature is language, language is literature. Yeah, that is a very strong statement here. But let me ask you, what if the children don't like our selections? They are forced to learn texts, certain texts that may not really be that appealing to them. What do we do then?
Okay. Keyword, children. State age, to begin with. Usually language teachers, when we say children, we mean 7-11. Ages 7-11. Okay. All right, now here comes what we select. Do we select what kind of literature? Well, for those ages, we have the children. We have children's literature, and our learners don't always like what we choose to teach. I mean, do they really like when you are teaching the present perfect? They don't like it at all. We can all say that we will find very creative ways of teaching the present perfect or things like that, and we do, but still they don't like it that much. Children who like one thing will not like another. It's not what we choose, it is how we teach it. It is the how is really a very important word. So, and how much? So if we are talking, and your question was about 7-11, correct, Hannah? Ages 7-11, right. If we are teaching children this age, first of all, we don't really overburden them with literary works. We choose selectively and according to the, let's say, the age, as well as do we have more boys, or more girls, then we try to have something for everybody's taste. This time it's going to be something that will be more boyish. Next time it's going to be something that'll be more for girls and so on. Sometimes it is for both, you know, unisex and all that. And the important thing is to learn and to know how to teach literature, not as regards children only, but all ages, even the most advanced ages, if, let's say, this hasn't taken place before. So I've got two rules. I followed them all my life. I'll make a parenthesis here to say that somehow I've lived through all of these questions and I understand and I empathize. There was a time that in the United States at the University of Colorado, I taught junior and senior students, university students, who were all architects and engineers, but they were there because of the Vietnam War. They didn't want to be at the university, but they had enrolled so they would not be drafted. I used the same methods with them as I have eventually used the same methods with language learners. So there are two basic ways. One is to move from the known to the unknown and from feeling to thinking. And when we say move from the known to the unknown, let's say we have a short story or we have a novel. Let's start with that. Can I just show a slide just to make it, I can say it, but it's all right. I would like to show the slide. Okay, so I'll share and show the slide.
Ahmed Hussein had a hand up a moment ago. I don't know if he wants to say anything.
I didn't see the hand, I will address the, I'll go to what Ahmed wants. Do you want to say something? Yeah, there it is. Okay. Can I show this, Ahmed? And then you can say, or do you want me to wait?
Yes.
Should I go ahead or do you want me to?
Proceed. Go ahead.
Okay. So as teachers, as language teachers, and again, I'm saying language teachers, I'm not saying it's the only way, but I'm just saying a true and trusted way. Move from the known to the unknown and from feeling to thinking. And as W.H. Auden used to say, aim at the immediate experience. So what do? We start from the book, the cover of the book. We look at the title. Often when I conduct observation and feedback and I visit classes, I notice that what happens is, okay, open your books on page, let's say 10, and let's start reading. No, you've got to look. Each book, each novel is like a human being. So you have to look at the title. Try and understand the title first before you do anything, before the learners, I call them learners, before the learners read anything. Look at the title. What does it mean? What does it mean to you? What could be the possible, let's say, interpretations in their own, even limited English? They can say so. Look at the cover. Are there photos? Are there paintings? Are there drawings? The dress? What period is it? Is it taking place? Could it be taking place right now? These, of course, are prediction techniques. These are the techniques we use when we teach reading. Well, that's exactly what it is. If we are doing prose, we are teaching reading. But we are teaching reading of some of the most beautiful excerpts of language, which is literature. We try then to understand to predict rather from some if there are some drawings or photographs or anything inside the plot, the major characters. Yes, it's guesswork, but it is guesswork that entices and engages the child, the learner, the adolescent, the teenager. Will it be done easily? No, nothing is ever done easily, really, when we teach, but we know it as teachers. Some learners are willing, some learners are not willing, but gradually you engage them. As they start reading, we ask them, having selected ourselves, we ask them to read short passages where we ask them to guess the speaker or the persona. And we do not really use too many literary terms, but just very few. And with children, I wouldn't say persona. I would just say the person who's speaking. So we try to find the who, the what, the when, the where, the how, and the why. And eventually we use diagrams. I'm just going to show you one and then later on another one. Something like that. And could I cover, could I just refer to something we discussed, Hannah, when we were discussing this interview? This is also a way we can teach mixed ability classes. You asked, what do we do if the learners in a classroom are not of the same level? That's what I usually do. I ask them to work in groups, first individually, then in groups, and I assign the who to two, depending on the number. You know, the who to one group, the what to another, the when, the where, and so on. And then they get together and they fill out the information and they talk about it. Yes, sometimes while the lower levels sometimes will do this discussion in their mother tongue. Okay, I don't want them to, I don't encourage it, but I have to be realistic. Yes, sometimes they do. But what happens? When they have to report back, it'll be in English. So as I circulate around, I'll say, English, please, English, please, something we always do. And when they report back, it's in English. I'll stop here, Ahmed. Would you like to ask what you wanted to ask? Ahmed, you wanted to ask something. Can you hear me?
Okay, nothing more, but what you have mentioned is enough, but I just want to ask you a question. Regarding the selection, I myself teach grade 8 and in a national school perspective, my perspective. The students somehow are suffering from the way, okay, the book tackles some, let me say, some topics like storytelling, like poetry, poems, and they find themselves at a loss sometimes. How can I, as a teacher, handle such topics? There's something which is called small globe learning and independent learning. I myself feel somehow perplexed to make them satisfied with the content or the curriculum.
Okay. Can I ask you a question? You do need to answer it. I want, and everybody else, I want you to think about it. How?
Yes, pleasure.
How close to you do you feel to literature? How important is it for you, not as a teacher, as a human being, as a person?
Myself, not, I like literature.
You don't need to answer. Just think. And okay. Everybody, okay. Think. You see, okay. Often enough, we are, excuse me, often enough, we teach, or we are being asked to teach something that we don't really, really care about. And it is then twice as difficult because what we do is we bring up our own, let's say, to use an NLP term, our own negative anchors, and we use them and somehow transfer them to our learners. Sometimes it goes by osmosis or something. It's not. It's amazing how learners can X-ray each one of us. Actually, not just X-ray, CT scan, MRIs. When we walk into a classroom, whenever I walk into a classroom, also whenever I walk into a teacher training room with teachers, I do know that I am being X-rayed. In other words, they understand much more than I want to show or that I would care to talk about. It's always the other side of the fence. So back to the question and think about it. Number one, how close do you feel? And let me also say something else. We should never, ever talk about using literature in the foreign language classroom if we know that our learners are not being taught the literature of their own language. This is extremely important. It is like asking somebody to first become acquainted, then probably enjoy and somehow adopt another country's customs and culture when this person has not yet fully learned and understood his or her own customs and culture. It's the same thing. So our learners should already be taught their own literature at the mother tongue school or the mother tongue classroom. Is this being done? It's a question. I'm not saying it's not. I'm asking. Is it being done?
Ahmed, do you have an answer or shall I just jump in here?
Go ahead and jump. And he can, yes.
Ahmed?
Yes, I can't hear you well. There's a problem with the voice, I think.
Okay, it's fine. Let me jump in here. So Lilika, you were just talking about choosing something relevant to the students and not teaching them literature that is that's got nothing to do with the students or their backgrounds. Is that right?
No, I didn't say
sorry.
That.
No. I'm sorry. Can you repeat your question?
I said that when we use literature and I understand that in your educational system, obviously you use foreign literature, English literature, let's say English, American, whatever, literature much, much more often than in probably some other educational systems. And I understand also that you use it in the original, correct? Is that correct? I mean,
not all,
but you do use in English. Okay,
exactly.
Right. Okay, so what I said is because we as teachers, and you also said that there is this kind of, there's this major ambivalence and question on many teachers' part. Literature cannot, foreign literature, English literature in this case, can be taught, but first and foremost, we should know that our learners have had some affinity for their own literature, for the literature of their mother tongue. You can't ask anybody to like something that they haven't yet tasted in their own culture, in their own mother tongue. I find it extremely difficult to accept. So it should be part of a person's educational development. On the other hand, your Ahmed's question was poetry and this and that. How do we choose it? And they don't like it. And sometimes it is difficult and so on. First of all, poetry is something different. And I will refer to it. Poetry is different. Prose is different. Drama is different. Okay. And we shouldn't mix everything. Each one of these genres has its own way of being taught. And by the way, to make things easier, from the age of 11 or so, I would start, because up to then it's very easy with the fairy tales, you know, and children's literature and all that. It is very easy. Children start, I mean, who doesn't know Cinderella in all versions and in all languages, right? Who doesn't know Little Red Riding Hood? I mean, and of course there are, and this is where it is important, each country, I'm sure in Egypt you have your own fairy tales, as we have in Greece our own fairy tales, which are not Cinderella and not Little Red Riding Hood, but they are the Greek fairy tales. Don't you have your own fairy tales in your culture, in your literature? You do. Right. Okay. Now, if with 11-year-olds and up, if I were to start teaching literature, I would start from poetry. I would select poems, modern poets, modern English, modern American, Australian. I don't know the Australian so much, so I'll stay with English and American poems that use simple language. You know, that's how our learners can learn that everything has got a plot and a story. A poem has a plot, has characters, has a story. And it's easy because it's a few lines and it is simpler language.
If I may interrupt here,
yeah.
May I?
Yeah, sure.
All right. I would like to share a personal story here. Okay. Mm-hmm. Back in time, I remember, I was an avid reader and I would just go and find books, English literature books, simplified when I was young, abridged when I was a little bit older. And of course, I was taught literature when I was at school. Something I cannot forget is the time when they introduced an original text for Shakespeare. That was Julius Caesar. That was, an experience of a lifetime, really. Imagine a middle school or a prep school, second prep school student looking at Shakespeare's original verse or original prose. What happened is we could not really understand a single word, all of us, because simply it is written in original, Shakespearean language. The way we dealt with it is so funny because back in time, they did not really encourage us to analyze characters, to relate to this, to relate to that. Lots of memorization of events was really involved. So we were asked, prompted to tell what happened here, what happened there. It's about the plot, and we were supposed to memorize the events in character analysis. Anyways, what I did is I found a good Arabic translation of the original text, and I put them, both texts next to each other, really, comparing line by line, so I could really figure out what the whole thing was all about. That was my experience, and I'm not really sure it was the most enjoyable way or the right way to learn literature like that. What do you think?
And if I may say, that was a major mistake on the part of those who decided the syllabus and your teacher who probably chose it. Shakespeare is not to be taught to foreign language learners. Shakespeare is to be taught to literature majors once they have decided that they want to become literature majors. Shakespeare is to be seen as a play if you, you know, when you're older and you go and see it. Let me give you a parallel example. We all know about the Greek tragedies, the ancient Greek tragedies and comedies. As Greeks, unfortunately, when we are young, we study them, but unfortunately, we don't study them as we should. We translate them from ancient Greek into modern Greek and all that. However, when we go to the ancient theaters and we watch a performance, we understand fully well whatever is happening. Okay. Part of it is in here, in the heart, in the blood, in the genes, in whatever, in the fact that, yes, being in the open theater, it's very natural for us, and so on and so forth. Watching a Shakespearean play as a child, I didn't understand it as much as I did the Greek tragedy or the comedy. Later on, as an older person, yes. Shakespeare, Julius Caesar, whoever it is, even Romeo and Juliet, with the exception now that we have so many films of Romeo and Juliet, that they can first see Romeo and Juliet, fall in love with the actors first, and then the story, and then, but still, the language is difficult. This isn't a language for a foreign language learner. But there's Hemingway that can be read. Okay. There are modern plays that can be read and watched. Even Ibsen is easier, okay, in terms of language. So this is what teachers of language should be choosing. Teachers of literature, they choose whoever they wish. This is literature. It's a completely other, different field. But teachers of language use works that will help their learners develop the and use the English language and love the English language and somehow adopt it in a way, eventually adopt it. Can I show you a way of familiarizing learners with language, literary language, in other words, helping them? Because these are the things we need to do. By the way, as I said, these were the things I used to do with the native speakers, because literature sometimes to some people is something as foreign as it is to us. I don't know whether, you know, whether. Okay. Can I show something, a familiarization or something like that?
Go ahead, Lalika. Go ahead.
Because of the poetry that you... but I need to ask you, do you agree with me that you shouldn't have been taught Julius Caesar then or not?
Well, that was really something that really irritated me. I felt it. I felt something was terribly wrong. I mean, the practices at school were terribly wrong and put me off completely. Looking exactly. At original texts, I would never, ever approach an original text the way it was introduced
to me. There you see. Whereas some other things could have taken place. Okay, let me, I said earlier that there are two basic, let's say, approaches I use when I teach literature in the language classroom. The one is move from the known to the unknown and feeling thinking. By the way, we're talking about critical thinking, and we're talking about compassion and communication and all that in the 21st century, and the 21st century skills. Literature has got them all. Literature didn't wait for the 21st century to have these skills. Literature has had them all. So let's remember this. Right, I'll go quickly. These are some other patterns. Okay, I had it just Julius Caesar. That's not Julius Caesar. That's Ophelia here, John Everett Millais' painting. And this is from the movie Lars von Trier's Melancholia. If I were to be teaching Hamlet, if let's say the administration, the top administration, were to have forced me to teach Hamlet to language learners, I would start with things like this, with photos, asking them, who could she be? Where could she be? What could have happened to her? You know, what's the distinction between this photo and that photo? This is from the movie, this is the painting, and so on. And this is how I would get the learners into at least some of the feel of the play. Still though, I would reluctantly teach it because that's not the time to do it. Okay. My other basic approach is sensitizing our learners to the uses and meanings of words, because when we teach foreign language learners, when we teach literature, be it prose, drama, poetry, it's the vocabulary that often is very difficult in some cases, as it was in your Julius Caesar. So I before I even start using the work itself, the literary work, I start working with words, and I start helping my learners to become sensitive to words, to the English words. So one way is to teach literal and figurative meanings of words, the symbolism of words. And in this way, without actually telling them, that's how they learn similes and metaphors and personifications. For instance, to give you an example, a chair can be a chair, or it's a chair. What else can it be? What else can it stand for? And I ask my learners, a chair, look at a chair. Fine, it's a chair. What do we use it for? To sit on it. What else does it stand for? What could it stand for?
Authority, maybe.
Authority, yes. And yes. thus we might hear it as a throne also. Hmm? So a chair is a symbol for authority. What else could it be? Who else uses a chair and needs it a lot? Old people?
A baby.
Hmm? A baby? A baby uses the baby chair. Fine. So in this case, a chair can be what? A symbol for?
Hmm? Could be a lion tamer.
Okay. Yes, it can be that. It can be a symbol of illness or old age and so on. So here, and they start realizing that words stand for just more than what they are. They're not just a chair. They're not just a table or a road. They're really much, much bigger. They stand for something much, much more. Then I move on to, and I like this a lot, I do tell them, they're poetic images, and you know, they like it, they accept it, they don't accept it, eventually they do. So I say, I'll give you a poetic word and I would like you to give me a noun that would match, and then I will want you to tell me what kind of an image is it. So example, a red rose, usually they say heart, not always, usually. Shadow, what would you say for shadow? What noun would you give to shadow?
Symbol of what?
Shadow, not of what. You need to say a noun. Then you start.
How about dark, maybe?
Pardon? I didn't hear you.
Shame, repeat your word.
Maybe dark?
Dying?
Lying.
Dark?
Picture.
Shadow, a picture of someone? An image?
An image. Okay, an image. Morning image. Dew. Morning dew. What noun would you give to morning dew? Try to be a bit more metaphorical, figurative.
Morning dew.
Morning dew.
Hope.
Water drop.
Hope. Okay. Heaven's face.
Angel.
Angel. Oh, yeah.
Okay. And there's a list, and then they discuss and they agree, disagree sometimes. Of course, there are more. Look at some of the learners' images. Shadow. Death to some. Night to others. Fear to others. Morning dew. Peace. Contentment. Different images. Heaven's face. Eternity. Happiness. So this gradually sensitizes them. They gradually start realizing how beautiful language is, any language, and especially the one we are learning. So we do this. And that's a Jean Greenwood idea that I've used a lot. Then we do this, which is much more demanding. So I would do something like this with 13, 14, 15 plus year olds and older. Word matching. I ask them to match one word from A with another word from B, but not as they are. And I give you the example, marble tulips. And then to describe the image that they see in their mind or the feeling. And mine is, I took marble from here and tulips, marble tulips. What to me, the image I get is cemetery, death. Most probably because walking around the cemeteries, our cemeteries, you see a lot of marble flowers, statues, things like that. Would you like to try and match one with another?
Match.
Okay.
One from A and one from B. Yes.
Seagull and freedom.
This goes first, this goes next. So seagull.
Can I say freedom seagull?
Freedom seagull. Perfect. Yes. Okay. Shema. Yes. So what's the image you get in your mind or the feeling you have?
Well, it's peaceful because the seagull is white and it's flying up there in the sky. So this is kind of freedom.
Okay. All right. Move a bit higher. Go more figuratively, metaphorically, because what you described is the actual seagull flying.
Well,
it's okay. This is what we do with our learners. We, freedom seagull could be
freedom seagull.
Freedom
seagull. Well, yeah, freedom seagull is a sign of liberty.
Yes. A sign of liberty, a call of liberty.
Maybe spread your wings.
Yes, Exactly. So it's you know, and then, you know, we move on. And I say it doesn't necessarily have to be liberty in terms of a country and all that, or freedom. It could be freedom from a situation you're in, or a personal relationship you're in, and so on. And this then ties in with something else. You know, we do need to guide them. So these and some others, but I'm not going to continue, these and some others are some of the sensitizing activities. So poetry, Ahmed, to come back, needs to be, to begin with, modern poems, Stanley Kunitz, and not all of his poetry, not Sylvia Plath. She's fantastic, but she's very difficult to understand. She's for later on. Theodore Rettke, poets who use, let's call it, it's not, simple everyday English language, or rather language that they come across in their course books. It's got to start this way so they can eventually be able to deal with poetry. And the secret, always, you know, poetry teaches us how to really write correct English sentences. And what I usually do with the learners is look at this verse and find the main verb. You know how to understand a poem easily? It might seem simplistic, it's not. My specialization while being a literature major was poetry. I still write some, and I, in the language classroom, I guide my learners and teach them how to write poetry. They're not poets, but at least I help them develop a feeling for poetry. Find the main verb. And once you find the main verb, you find the who, the subject, and then the what. And by the time you've done this, you've understood the verse.
Well, may I just share my experience with poetry?
Yeah.
Well, as a matter of fact, I loved drama and novel. Okay, I would love to read plays and, you know, novels. That's just a fact. I've always had the trouble with poetry because of the way it was taught again. Okay, they taught us about meter, how it sounds, you know, I mean, how to create a rhythm, this and that and the other. And simply look at a poem and say what we feel about it. And to be honest, I just looked at poems and felt nothing about them. It's like, how can I relate to the poem? You cannot just ask me to look at any poem and share my feelings about it. I mean, I have no background whatsoever. So just help me approach it in a different way. So anyways, I hated poetry for that reason. And mind you, it's English poetry, English and Arabic poetry for that matter, where in Arabic it was even worse. I had to memorize the lines by heart because in exams I had to recite them, and maybe orally as well in oral exams. I mean, what suffering, okay, I had to go through.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I fully agree with you. Number one, another. Let's call, I mean, I would call it false assumption that, as the, you said, you were asked, what is the feeling you get and all that. No, to begin with, poetry is to be recited. And the person who needs to recite it, in our case, has to be the teacher, or you find a recording, if you can find a recording. Because poetry, voice has a lot to do with poetry. It is all these nuances, all of these things that are coming out, the words. So it's got to be recited. The learners need to hear the end product, because this is what we need to get first. Then we start all these sensitizing. Then to give you an example, I wish we don't have the time. There's a beautiful poem of Stanley Kunitz, The Approach to Thebes. Extremely language, amazing, wonderful English, rich language, adjectives that you've never thought you could find all together.
Can you repeat that again, please?
The Approach to Thebes, Stanley Kunitz, Kunitz. Some later time, Hannah, if you wish, we could just do The Approach to Thebes and just show how it's been done. It's based on the Oedipus myth. Anybody who says, read The Approach to Thebes and try to understand it makes a mistake. First you start with, do you know anything about the myth? Who was what? What happened? What happened to Oedipus? What happened to the Sphinx? What's the Sphinx? What was it? So, and you know, I've taught The Approach to Thebes to B1 learners. It was an experiment, and it was a risky experiment, but I did it this way, and we managed it, and they enjoyed it. Yes, it took us time. I decided I would do this just to convince this beautiful group of learners what a wonderful experience poetry is. And so this is what I did. I started from the myth. I asked them, many of them had forgotten the myth. So I reminded the myth to them, or the others reminded. And then, and what did the Sphinx look like? Now, here, another parenthesis. Our learners have fantastic talents. When you get to something like that, and before you continue, ask them, for instance, those who draw, to draw. I asked some, and I said, who would like to draw the Sphinx? 4 hands went up. They drew the Sphinx. Others, Oedipus young, Oedipus old, things like that. It was very, who would like to draw the palace where everything is taking place, because Kunitz refers to the palace and the sheets with blood and things like that. Beautiful poem. And then we had it all around us in paintings and drawings, and continued dealing with the language. Fantastic experience. You can't do this every time. Again, let's be realistic. We cannot do this every time. But on the other hand, as you say, Hannah, nobody should be asking you, just give your feel. What give your feel? You can't. You read Sylvia Plath, and yes, since we're teachers and we've been dealing with language, and in some cases, let's say language experts, we can hear the flow, we can hear the music, we can hear all of these things, but you can't immediately catch what she's talking about when she's talking about being in the shoe, and the shoe is her body. I mean, you can't ask things like this. You find simpler things. I don't know. Have we answered
any questions? I think so. I think so. I just want to make sure that everyone's question was sort of answered one way or another. And maybe Vance can help me with that. So for a wrap up, because basically we have like 2 minutes to go. And there's a lot more to talk about, Lilika. I mean, you've just opened up so many interesting areas for us. And I believe we need a follow-up sometime.
A lot of questions need to be raised.
Yeah. So Vance is back on camera. Do you think you can wrap this up somehow?
Well, my thoughts as I was listening early on were that it was hard to know what exactly was meant by literature, because Hannah had said early on that she thought it was outdated, but then there's also literature refers to, there's modern literature, and modern contemporary novels, and there's nonfiction, which is also literature. Literature is whatever comes between a couple of books. I think someone in the chat tried to define it. By the way, this chat will be posted at learningtogether.net probably tomorrow. So the chat will be there, and you can go back and read your comments. Some people had questions. One of them related to the question of what is literature. Laura asked at some point if you could recommend books for teenagers that teenagers would like. So the things that the conversation then went on to Shakespeare, and but no, that's not the kind of literature we were talking about. So that again, in my mind, raised the question of what literature are we talking about? Because for Laura, she's looking for something for teenagers to like. So I Googled and I put in the text chat a link to some recommendations for literature for teenagers. So, but literature is different things to different people. And Lilika obviously has, she's talking more about having people appreciate poetry. So she's focusing on that. Poetry is one kind of literature. It's a big, and as Ahmed says, it raises many questions. This is a big, huge topic, and you can't really address it in 1 hour, especially with people as knowledgeable as the people we have here. And Lilika certainly knows her subject, and we all have, Hannah has relayed some of her experience with it. I have a different experience, although I really like, of course, I grew up with literature being taught to me, and then I read some. I even took a course in Shakespeare. But anyhow, we all have our background in literature in Arabic and in English and other languages, as you mentioned. So I guess here we are. That's a wrap-up of sorts. I don't know if anybody wants to add to that, help us wrap this up. Go ahead. Yes.
Hmm. You wanted to say something, I guess.
No, I just want to thank all of you regarding such beneficial and more than awesome tips on how to handle the literature in general, okay, and general English in particular. But one more question, if you let me, can I?
Sure.
Yes,
go ahead.
Please.
What I understood after such deep explanation that we don't have to tell the students the symbols their own, but we have to simplify them or ask them something like brainstorming questions, okay, before going through the topic. So am I talking right or what?
Can you phrase your question again, please, yeah, Ahmed?
Again.
Yeah.
What I understood from such deep explanation regarding literature and decision and all this stuff, we as teachers are not allowed to tell the students the symbols or the story as it is, but we have to simplify in order to involve them and got them engaged in the topic. Is it right?
It's not a question of allowed or anything. As teachers, I would not use this. I mean, we try and use whatever ways we can. And I didn't mean, as teachers, we are to prepare our learners in order to meet, within quotation marks, meet and get to know a work of literature. We are not to do what Hannah was asked to do, read Julius Caesar or something like that. We are to prepare them, whatever it is. So as teachers of language, because there's the difference, as teachers of language, not teachers of literature, there's a tremendous difference here. So as teachers of language, what we need to do is first really study this work and decide how we can prepare our learners to meet this work, how we will introduce it. And yes, what we are to do is to really use the techniques we use when we teach reading. Pre-reading activities, while reading activities, after reading activities. In other words, do a lot of prediction at the beginning. Prediction is very important. And it is important we find out now in the 21st century, and we've been doing it for so many years, it is important because prediction is critical thinking, problem solving, and all that. We are actually helping them develop their thinking abilities. So you are to prepare them. We are to prepare them. We are to help them understand so then they can enjoy. Because the whole point of literature is to be enjoyed. And the whole point of language is to help us enjoy literature.
Okay. Thank you, Lalika, for that. Okay. I was wondering if other... Oh, yeah, Ahmed, does that answer your question? Yes. Let me ask Shaima if she...
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. Shaima, do you want to say one last thing before we sign off? Shaima?
Of course. First of all, yeah, can you hear me well now?
Yes. I can.
Okay. I want to thank you so much for this webinar. And I got a question regarding teaching like grade four. Is it better to teach them the story as a whole class, first activity, or introduce the whole story in general from beginning to end in order to get the whole thing, the problem and the solving of what happened, and then go chapter by chapter, or is it just to start this from the beginning, go chapter by chapter?
Step by step is always the best solution. And by the way, let's just remember something, since it's come to the attention of the rest of all of the world. Passage by passage, step by step, and this approach that I've been discussing, and it's not just poetry, Vance, it is prose as well, is also very helpful if we have learners with learning differences. We need to remember that learners with learning differences cannot read a whole text. We need to break the text into paragraphs. In many cases, we need to change the color of each paragraph. So yes, step by step, Shaima, would be much better. But every now and then, what you try to do is you try to see if they have got, let's say, the not the main idea, the whole main idea, but if they got some of the idea of what has happened so far, and then they move on. Or you can have your class read various parts and then get them to get one from each group into different groups, and they share and then they present. By the way, the studying of literature in language teaching also helps a lot presentation skills and presentation techniques, because when they report back, they need to tell us they need to use presentation skills. So step by step.
Okay. Thank you for that one again.
Thank you very much.
Inviting me. I enjoyed it. After all of our, let's say, agonies, Hannah, with Zoom and everything. Vance, thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Nice each one of you. Thank you for your help. And till I see you again some other time, okay?
Very soon.
Thank you for your enlightenment, your expertise.
Sir. Thanks you.
Your perspectives.
Vance,
thank you.
Mm-hmm. Would you like to end with your famous lines?
Well, you could try it if you want.
Okay, so let me do that. Let's wrap up. Thank you very much, everyone here.
Excellent.
I mean, I cannot thank you enough for the interactive session. Lalika, activated everyone in the room. Everyone is really interactive here. This is Learning Together, episode 423. This is 9TESOL Interactive webinar session. Today is Saturday, the 28th of September, 2019. Thanks for joining us in 9TESOL Interactive Webinars with Lalika Puri from Greece. Tomorrow, we're going to meet with George Chatzis. Okay, George is our friend. He won't mind me mispronouncing his last name. And by the way, George is attending this session. George, would you like to unmute yourself and say one last word before your session tomorrow?
I didn't see you, George.
George is here. Okay, maybe he's busy or he cannot unmute now. Anyway,
as we say goodbye, just look at Albert Camus. It's considered to be, it's attributed to him. Let's call it a poem. Don't walk behind me, I may not lead. Don't walk in front of me, I may not follow. Just walk beside me and be my friend.
Wow.
George is not here, he's not following.
That is what I meant, Ahmad. That is what I meant in terms of simple English.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
There are many poems like this. So
I wish I were taught like that. Thank you. Well, I need to take a course with you. Okay, that's for sure.
All of us.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Well, thank you.
Bye.
And
thumbs up single. Yeah, that's something I learned yesterday. A thumbs up to end
screenshot?
The session.
And take, who's doing this screenshot? Screen,
okay. I cannot take a screenshot now, can I?
Well, you know, there will be a recording, and you can take a screenshot from the recording.
Okay.
Good idea.
Yeah.
So you had it.
Okay, anybody else want to take a screenshot? You have to do that.
Yeah. Allow me. Okay, so I'll try my best here using my hand.
Isn't there a way you can do it here in the?
Yeah, just a second. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. Now I can.
Okay.
Got it.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Great. Okay.
Thank you very much.
That'll all go in the archive.
Is it fine?
Okay, well, I'll stop the recording now. So thank you very much, everyone, for attending, and good night to you all, or good day, wherever you happen to be.
Afwan.
Shukran. Shukran. Bikulkum. In basatna ma'abad. Hina fil ijtima. Okay.
Wow.
Bye-bye.
I did not know you are that fluent in Arabic. Okay.
Ma yasir.
Yes, you are. Yes, you are.
I'm jealous. And I'm envious now. I want to, you know, I do know that tuk-tuk and some
tuk-tuk.
Oh, my God.
It's not even an Arabic word. It comes from India.
It
comes from India.
It was got to be by the teachers in Alexandria. So,
okay. Halasna, and
Halas
al Musajil al Hain. Okay, Ma Salama
al Hain. La al Hain, this is a Gulf Arabic.
And a Khaliji.
Khaliji, yes. I'll teach you.
This is in Saudi.
I'll teach you.
This is here. KSA.
Is it al
Khaliji?
Yes.
Which is Gulf? No.
Yeah, this is Gulf Arabic.
Yes. My teachers were from all over the place.
They say Al-Hin,
the word I like is Inshallah. Mm-hmm. That's the
Inshallah,
word.
Yeah, God willing.
Inshallah, it's for everyone, okay? Inshallah.
Yeah.
See you again.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Bye-bye then.
Bye-bye.